Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Metal Hammer podcast, episode 151. I am Mel from Metal Hammer, and you're Elle from Metal Hammer. Hello, Elle.
Hello, Mel.
How the hell are you?
I'm okay, which is what I say every week. I need to think of something better. What is wrong with me?
I am also okay. We've just come off a deadline, haven't we? So it's always that time in the month where we're a bit like, oh, I can see through time, but... It's okay. We made it. We've just put to bed another huge issue, which we're going to reveal in a few weeks' time. It's a special edition issue, so it's going to come with lots of bells and whistles. I know lots of people have been asking where are the free gifts and where are the little extras that we always have with issues of Metal Hammer, and there are going to be some special extra bits and bobs with our next issue that we think you're all going to like very much. It's a big one. But if you can't wait till then, you should go and pick up our current issue that's out right now. It's a big tribute to the one and only Alexi Laiho. It's out in stores across the UK. Big tribute featuring a ton of names from across his life, bandmates, loved ones, people that he's worked with, people that he knew through much of his life. They're all in there paying tribute to a man who is already much missed and still feels quite surreal that he's even gone. But you can get those in stores, as I said, across the UK right now, or you can pick it up from tinyurl.com/gethammer. We also have a few of our Epica bundles left. There's not a lot of them left, but there's still a few hanging in there. So if you're an Epica fan and you want to pick up a special Epica cover edition of our latest issue that comes bundled with a lyric sheet signed by Simone Simons, you can pick that up from tinyurl.com/Epica bundle. So yeah, loads of stuff out there, and we got even more stuff to come for you guys. And speaking of stuff that's coming, there's a new Gojira album on the way out. Finally!
Can't wait. It's going to be so good, isn't it? Can't wait.
It just is. It's just going to be amazing. The album is called Fortitude. It's out later this year. It looks exciting as hell. We're super stoked about it. If this doesn't appear very high in everyone's albums of the year list, I'm sure something will have gone drastically wrong, because they are. I mean, you could make an objective argument that they're the greatest modern band in metal. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say. They're just incredibly, incredibly tight. And so much of their sound has been copied by people now as well. They're sort of reaching that pinnacle of being like this big metal band, and you can see that in the way they've influenced all the younger metal bands, but they're still very current, still very relevant. It's not like they've had a career and then this is kind of the end of it. They're right at the peak right now.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm hoping that we'll get some kind of I'm sure we will as well, kind of a natural evolution from Magma, because I just love that record so much. I know Elle did as well. I think it was both of our albums of the year that year, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was Hammer's album of the year as well.
It was indeed. It was Metal Hammer's album of the year in 2016, and richly deserved. I can't believe it's been like four. By the time this album comes out, it'll be like 4.5 years between albums. That's a long stretch, man. We need Gojira in our lives.
I'm not sure how that happened.
Because time is horrible. Evil. But yeah, Fortitude is the name of the album. It is out later this year. We're very excited about it, and we'll have all the updates on that over on metalhammer.com. Don't you worry about that. We're going to do a special reader Q&A this week. So it's nothing but answering your most excellent questions. If you're sitting there thinking, oh, I wanted to ask a question, but I didn't know how, go over to facebook.com/metalhammerreaders. It's where we all hang out. It's where the brilliant readers and listeners of Metal Hammer all hang out as well. And it's where you can pose your questions for podcasts like this. So we should just get stuck in, I guess, should we?
Let's do it.
Go on then. You take the first one.
I will. This is from Tom Farrow, and he says, what are the best and worst guest spots or features on songs? And I know exactly what you're going to say for the worst.
Ooh, go on then.
You want me to tell you?
Shall I do my best first?
No, I'm going to predict it.
Do you want to predict my best ones as well, or just the worst ones?
Just the worst one.
Okay, I'll run through my best ones then. They're a bit predictable, to be honest, but they are really that good. I'm sure you've got at least one of these as well, Elle. I've got Neil Fallon on Blood of Thunder. I've got Kerry King riffing on No Sleep Till Brooklyn, classic. And I always forget he's actually in there until I was doing a bit of research on cameos recently for this very question, in fact. And I saw him in the video, and it's just, yeah, what a song. Maynard's on Passenger, of course. Just an all-time great collaboration between Maynard and Deftones. Still remember everyone being gutted that Maynard didn't come out for Passenger with Deftones at Download 2006, because Tool were literally playing right after Deftones. Why didn't it happen? Ozzy on Stillborn by Black Label Society, absolute classic. And for some more recent ones, I've got Chino on Embers by Lamb of God. Still remember the first time we were listening to that track, El, and we were just like, is that Chino? Oh my God, it's Chino Moreno on Lamb of God. Oh my God.
Good.
So good. And I've got Rob Halford on Lift Me Up by Five Finger Death Punch as well. I love his rhymes on his rhymes, making him sound like a rapper. I love his verses on that. Really, really good. Yeah, just like a kick-ass celebratory heavy metal track. So that's really good. So yeah, maybe a bit predictable, but that's because they're good choices. So what are your favorite guest spots, Elle?
I love that Embers one. So good. Well, Tool, Passenger, Maynard James Keenan is my absolute favorite. I just love that song so much. And then that was sort of my classic choice. And then my recent choice was Baby Metal on Kingslayer by Bring Me the Horizon, because their collaborations are just kind of immersive. Because I remember we had Steve on here and he was saying he didn't really like it because it was like a Baby Metal song, not a Bring Me song. But I kind of like that. It literally sounds like they mashed their two styles together, not just that Baby Metal appeared on it. So I think that's a really cool modern crossover. And in that vein, I also like Grimes on Nihilist Blues as well. They've done some really good collaborations.
I love that. I'm sorry, I thought you were going to say something else. I love that Grimes tune with Bring Me. That's so good. And is it Grimes? No, it's Light that's on Crucify Me, isn't it? Which is probably my favourite Bring Me song.
Oh, I thought you were going to say for a minute, what's the Papa Roach one that's got a really nice guest spot on it? The Jairus Johnson recently. I like that. The Jairus Johnson collaboration. He's a TikTok dude. And they did Last Resort Reloaded. Quite like that as well.
Oh, I thought that was awful. I mean, I applauded them for doing it because I just thought, nah, man. I applauded them for doing it, but I just thought that was one of those where it's a good idea and it helps push Papa Roach to a whole different generation, which is great. But the actual, like, it butchered one of the greatest metal songs of all time, man. I just can't be doing with that version of it.
I like it.
Well, you can listen to it then, Elle, and I'll stick to the original, like the miserable, crusty old new metaler I am.
Yeah, definitely do that. I think it's one of those things that will probably age really badly in the same way that all of the kind of collaborations with the sort of Skrillex type bands, some of them have aged well and some of them have aged badly. And I think it might age very badly, but I quite like it just at the moment.
I mean, to be fair, we still hold it down for that Korn, those Korn tracks with Skrillex.
Love those. I was thinking of Skylar Grey, actually, with Papa Roach. She was on Periscope.
Fair dues to them.
Go
on then. Guess my least favourite. I'll be quite surprised if you've guessed both of these. I've got two shouts for my worst and they're the same band.
Your least favourite is Corey Taylor on the Korn song, A Different World.
Yes, it is. That is one of the ones I put, yeah.
Because you think he sounds like an old man shouting at a cloud.
He literally sounds like an old man just shouting at a cloud in that song. I also put Fred Durst on All in the Family, which I kind of didn't really like. At the time, I loved that track. Well, not at the time, it was slightly before us into Korn. But when I listened to it for the first time, I loved that track. But when we did Korn for the Hall of Fame a few months ago, we revisited that track and it's not aged well at all. But yeah, Corey Taylor on A Different World, man. I'm sorry, it's not a good cameo. He literally is like, it just sounds like he's telling some kids to get off his lawn. Like, I just can't be doing with it.
I like it, but it's hard for me because I just like most Korn songs, really. So I think, yeah, I just kind of accept it as part of being part of Korn world. It doesn't bother me. But your reaction to it, it was just really funny.
What's yours? Do you have any shouts for worse than now?
I think just Metallica and Lou Reed and Lulu, which is obviously a whole record. But I do think it is good that Metallica are a band that try different things and experiment. And I was speaking to Lars and he said, you know, oh, if someone said to you, like, Eleanor, you can collaborate with your favourite artist, wouldn't you do it? And it's like, yeah, obviously. So no disrespect to them. It's just not for me.
That's fair enough. And yeah, probably a good shout, really. I kind of feel like this next question from George Willoughby might be a little bit more in my ballpark, maybe, Al. George Willoughby. George, I don't want to be presumptuous, but George Willoughby has said top five post-2000 Maiden songs. Obviously, I'm including the year 2000 in this because we've got to count Brave New World and that, otherwise it's ridiculous. But yeah, top five post-2000 Iron Maiden songs. Did you bother with this one?
I did, yeah. I picked very obvious choices. I picked Blood Brothers, which is my favourite one. Out of the Silent Planet.
Oh, I love that tune.
It's a good tune. And then, obviously, like Brave New World ones. And then I went for Book of Souls ones. I went for If Eternity Should Fail, Death or Glory. And then, just for a laugh, I picked Empire of the Clouds.
No, come on.
The reason I picked it is because of the airship story.
Oh, yeah. When... Basically, the short way of telling this story is that when we were doing our big cover feature on the Book of Souls when that album came out, this kind of tells you how ridiculous the one of Iron Maiden is, because our boss at the time, and man who's been on this podcast, Alexander Milas, wanted us to do a big thing on the airship, as he kind of put it at the time. And Elle put all this work into commissioning and explaining this big airship thing. And then, because there were different multiple aero vehicles associated with Iron Maiden at that time, we realised that you spent about 3 days putting together a thing on the wrong airship. Like, how? I can't remember which one you did instead, because it was supposed to be the one that Empire of the Clouds was about, wasn't it?
Well, I hadn't heard the album because the album was really restricted to people who had to hear it for the feature. So we were in a meeting and he just said, oh, the final song is about an airship, can you do a special feature on the airship? And Bruce Dickinson had invested in an airship, so I got in touch with their management and asked for like these blueprints and information about the airship he'd invested in. But it was actually
that
about
was it. Yeah,
it was about a historic airship.
I forgot, so then, that was it. Yeah, he invested in some massive, crazy looking new airship that was due to come out. I don't know if that ever was a thing in the end, was it? I don't know what happened with that.
I don't know. And then Empire of the Clouds is about this historic airship. And so on the day we went to press, I found like this massive airship like academic guy and just called him and was like, can you tell me about this airship? And so we worked it out and we did a feature on the right airship, but it wasn't the thing you want to hear on the day you go to press.
Never has the word airship been used so frequently on a heavy metal podcast. Yeah, literally the only band in the world where that could happen. I mean, I like Empire of the Clouds, but it's not even in my top probably five tracks on that album. But I think there was a fine choices. I've got some of those as well. Did you have Wicker Man in yours?
No, I didn't.
Oh, how can you not have Wicker Man?
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I've got Wicker Man in mind because it's like just I'd probably actually put it on a par with Aces High for the greatest Maiden opener ever. Like every time they drop that track, I lose my fucking mind. I love it. And it was the first song that actually got me into Iron Maiden, so I'm probably a bit biased. I've done this in a kind of chronological order of the albums that came out. So I've got Wicker Man, I've got Blood Brothers as well. As you said, it's an unbelievable song, all-time classic. I've got Passchendaele off of Dance of Death, which remains just one of the greatest Maiden songs ever. Absolutely incredible. I knew what my pick off Book of Souls would be, but I didn't know what else to put on there. I did think about If Eternity Should Fail, because that's an amazing track. But I went with For the Greater Good of God off of A Matter of Life and Death, because that whole album is just stunning, and that's probably my favourite track off it. And I loved it when they revisited it on the last tour. And then from Book of Souls, I've got The Red and the Black, which is just stunning. And I think if it weren't for the fact that Empire of the Clouds was so long and was about a giant airship, I feel like the Red and the Black would have been the song that everyone would be kind of talking about to this day, because it's a classic. It's a classic. But I honestly could have picked 50 songs from the post-2000 era, then I could have been gassing on about them. So Cool. Thanks, George. I love that question almost as much as I love this next question from Chris Lloyd, which we have been agonizing over for the past 2 days. And I think we've just about got away with it. Do you want to read the next question, Elle?
This was a really hard question. Chris Lloyd asked, you are tasked with creating the ultimate metal compilation album of only 10 songs. The catch is, each of the songs you put onto this album must be in the same track position as they were on their original album, e.g. Aces High, Breaking the Law, Laid to Rest, Hit the Lights, could only be song one on the album. Which 10 songs do you pick?
I love doing this question because I've actually, Elle shaking her head. I did enjoy, love doing this one because I'd actually already done quite a lot of these kind of things. Me and my mate Jack will have this ongoing thing where we just pick like a top five that we have to both answer, or like a list that we have to do. And we have actually done this with specific bands before. So like I've done this with Metallica and I've done this with Maiden and some others. And I came prepared, basically. I'm pretty happy with mine for the most part. I think I smashed it. I actually think track one was probably the hardest one to pick because there's just so many classic metal openers. But I thought I'd start at the source and go classic and old school. So I went with my favorite Black Sabbath song, the title track of my favorite Black Sabbath album, Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. Literally my favorite heavy metal riff ever written. Just opening with that, I just think would be colossal. So Sabbath's my number one. Then we go Turbo for track two, because I've got People Equals Shit by Slipknot. What? It's a track two. It's the second track.
I just love the idea of like people who are like well into classic metal just like sitting down with this compilation album being like, yeah, Sabbath, this is exactly how it should be. And then 3 minutes later, they've got People
here we go again, motherfucker. Yeah, we're doing this. Do you want metal or not? We're going in. yeah, People Equal Shit. When I was thinking about my first tracks, I thought of People Equal Shit as a potential number one, but then I realised there's an intro track on the Iowa, so it's number two. So it works. Number three, a bit more of a party vibe maybe. I've got the Life by Korn. We are very much in late 90s, early 2000s territory now. And track four, I should say as well that these songs aren't all necessarily you know my favorite songs by these bands, but you know they're all iconic. Maybe sometimes I've gone for like the more iconic rather than my personal favorite, and that's kind of what I've done with track four for this, because I picked My Last Serenade by Killswitch Engage, which is obviously one of their all-time great songs. It's not necessarily my favorite Killswitch song, but it's one of their very best known, and I think it sits quite nicely in there. So number four, I've got My Last Serenade by Killswitch Engage. Number five, I've gone for an In Flames track, one of my favorite metal bands of all time. Again, it's one of their heavy hitters, not necessarily my very favorite song, but it's one of their most iconic. So for track five, I've gone for Cloud Connected.
I love that song.
Such a banger in it. And I think the good thing with all of these is just like, if you know these tracks, like hearing them one after the other, like hearing the intro to hearing this fucking snare on Got the Life, and then hearing that melodic intro to Last Serenade, and then hearing the for Cloud Connected, it's just such a banging run. You can tell I've really geeked out over this. Track six, the biggest metal song of the 21st century, I reckon. Billions of fucking views and streams and all the rest of it. Absolutely iconic. Again, not necessarily my favorite song by System of a Down, but it's by far their biggest. I've gone to Chop Suey. And from here on in, it just gets bigger and bigger, really. I've got Chop Suey at number six. Number seven, I've got Creeping Death. I was going to have Fade to Black as my Metallica pick, but I decided to go with Creeping Death because it's like a metal compilation. So I thought I'd have to go for the quintessential metal song. Obviously, I was going to go with Iron Maiden at some point. And I did actually think about, I know that the question asked for 10 picks, but I did actually think about capping my picks at eight so I could finish on Hallowed Be Thy Name, because I think it's the greatest heavy metal song ever written. But when I realized what my number 10 could be, I was like, okay, we can keep going. So I've got Hallowed Be My Name for number eight, My number nine, I struggled with this a little bit, to be honest. I decided to go with an Aussie track. I know that means Aussie's making two appearances because I picked Sabbath earlier, but it's fucking Ozzy Osbourne. He's allowed. So I went with Shot in the Dark by Ozzy for number nine. Bit cheesy, bit Euro kind of pomp, synthy stuff going on there. But it's a classic, so I'm backing it anyway. And then obviously number 10, I had to finish with Rain in Blood because how could you not? So that's my list. I am very happy with it. I would mosh to this. What is your list, Elle?
If I was in a bar and those songs came on, I'd be that really annoying, overenthusiastic person every time the song changed. Like, going, I love this song. And just generally being annoying.
I too remember our nights out at Big Red.
Nights out, a thing of the past.
No, so, a thing of the future, Al, a thing of the future.
True. I found this really hard. If you listen to this podcast regularly, you'll know that I hate rating things, but that's my job. So here we go. I have gone with a disclaimer. This is a mixture of songs that I think people should hear as examples of what metal is and songs that I just really like. That's kind of how I did it. I started off being quite objective about it and being like, oh, if someone said, what is metal? These are 10 tracks you do. And then by the end of it, I was like, nah, fuck it. I'm just going to put in some songs I like. So
nice.
Number one is Enter Sandman by Metallica. Because that's the song I always choose when people say, if an alien came down and you had to play them a metal track, what would you pick? Because it's just massive and crosses all generations. So that's my number one. Number two is Paranoid by Black Sabbath. Because
wow,
you have to have Sabbath in here or it's not a proper metal compilation. And that is a classic Sabbath song. Number three is actually the same as yours, Merlin. It's Got the Life by Korn, a good party starter. It's not my favourite Korn song, but it was the one that fitted in most easily to the number rule. Number four, I've gone for Duality by Slipknot.
Oh my God, these are big songs.
Well, I love the song, and it's also just another one of those, if you want to know what metal sounds like, here's a Slipknot song. It's no people equal shit, though, Merle, is it?
Nope.
Number five, I've gone with Closer by Nine Inch Nails. Again, not my favourite Nine Inch Nails track, but the biggest Nine Inch Nails track and a good example of what they do. Number six, I've gone with Living After Midnight by Judas Priest.
Oh, I was gutted that I couldn't fit any Priest on here. That was one of the bands that I was really annoyed I couldn't fit in.
Yeah, that's another thing where if an alien came down, you'd be like, yeah, Judas Priest and metal. And that song, whenever it comes on when you're in a bar or something, it's just like, yeah, Judas Priest. Number seven, I've gone for Parabola by Tool, which is just one of my favourite songs. And I knew that it would be quite easy to fit in because track sevens on records are probably not the most, you know, single worthy ones, whatever. And I knew this was track seven and it's an awesome track. And it's good to have a little bit of more progressive metal on there, something a bit different to the straight up stuff. So then, you know, if it's an introduction, people will be like, oh, what's this? Number eight, I've gone with In the End by Linkin Park. Paper Cut's actually my favourite song, but I can't have that one. So I've gone with In the End. Number nine, Passenger by Deftones. I said earlier, I just think that song is phenomenal. What a track nine. I can't think of many other albums where my favourite track on it would be a track nine. It's quite rare.
Nice.
And number 10, the same as you, Raining Blood by Slayer, because you have to have Slayer, and what better song than Raining Blood?
Yes, it's got a, like, I think there's a lot of arguments for what should open a thing like this, but I think, if you can find a better track 10 than Raining Blood in heavy metal, then knock yourselves out, because I don't think there's many. I would jam and mosh and bop to all your choices, Elle. I'll find choices.
Thanks. Thanks for validating my 10-song album. No, I just need to find someone to play it to. I need to find a metal newbie and then go, what do you think of this?
What's your compilation called? Heavy Metal.
Yeah, Heavy Metal.
Yes, and mine could be Heavy Myrtle. Oh, that sounds crap. Oh God, we've gone full Partridge. Chris Haylock, has asked, would you say it's easy, oh God, this is a loaded question, would you say it's easy or hard to please the metal community? I see a lot of content gets moaned about, so is it tricky trying to build a magazine that pleases everyone? What do you say to this, Al?
Yes, Chris, it is tricky trying to build a magazine that pleases everyone, because everyone likes different things and everyone has a different idea of what metal is. So it's very tricky. I would say a lot of the content does get moaned about. You can see that online, but obviously different people are moaning about different things. The person who moans about System of Down isn't moaning about Slayer, or the person who moans about Metallica isn't moaning about Bring Me the Horizon. There's just, yeah, we have to consider all genres and all eras. And there's been, if you count from Sabbath, as we know, there's been 50 years of metal. So there are a lot of years of metal to consider and a lot of subgenres of metal to consider. So we always try to build a magazine that covers the spread of eras and genres. But yeah, it's a tricky tightrope to walk.
Yeah, I mean, and also those people that are just endlessly moaning on Facebook, they barely read the articles on the site, let alone actually picking up the magazine edition of Metal Hammer as well. So we don't worry too much about people that moan. You know, social media is a very toxic place. And I think if you get too caught up in concentrating on negative comments that might, you know, be attracted to a certain article, you basically ignore the majority of reactions, which are normally likes and whatever else. And I know it sounds a bit silly to, you know, kind of measure yourself in that sense, but if we put something up there and it's reached a ton of people and there's a ton of people that liked it, and we can see, because we've got the back end data, remember, that there's a ton of people clicking through to read it, we're not going to be worried too much about the, you know, a couple of dozen people that are just having a whinge on Facebook because they don't understand the fact that metal doesn't specifically tailor itself to their very narrow needs. And also, if you're fed up of seeing Metallica, you know, pieces or whatever on Facebook, stop commenting on them, because you're adding to the drive that makes them more popular. That means we keep doing it. Like, it is, we do have lots of other stuff on our Facebook and website as well that you can interact with. If you don't like that stuff, you can ignore it. You don't have to moan. I don't understand the mentality of people that will actually see something on the internet and then go out of their way to moan about it. It's so weird. I just don't know.
I don't understand it either. It's a really good point. I just don't understand why you would do that. Just ignore it. If you don't want to read it, don't read it.
Yeah, exactly. It's people are strange, aren't they? But you know, we're pretty proud of what we do at Hammer, and as I said, most of the people that are on our discussion group on Facebook at facebook.com/metalhammerreaders are all really lovely people, and sometimes they'll have some interesting constructive criticisms that we'll talk to them about. But we very rarely have people just whinging on there, because when you actually talk to the people that improperly invest in this music and in this scene, they tend not to just be sad twats that moan on Facebook, basically. So there.
Max James asks, what's your favourite piece of clothing merch that you own?
I feel like we did this a little bit, because someone asked us what our favourite thing that we've ever spent money on in music was a few weeks ago. So, but number one, definitely mine, Maiden t-shirt from Twickenham. Probably my favourite gig ever. Just an epic, epic day out. Iron Maiden at a stadium in the UK. Just crazy. And one of the best eddies ever with the rugby ball. I love that as well. Mine's a proper one because it's got the date on the back. So it's not one of the ones that you could buy on the website afterwards. And in terms of just, I mean, a more recent version, my Metallica S&M 2 t-shirt that I bought at that gig in San Francisco. I was going to say last year, 2019. Those two are my two favorites, because they're tied to very specific events.
I don't ever really have a favorite. I think at the moment my favorite is my Slipknot long sleeve, and that's literally just because it's been very cold, and I was never a long sleeve person, but obviously they've been becoming more popular as sort of 90s fashion resurges, and now tons of bands are doing long sleeves all the time. And I just got a few. I've got a Slipknot one, a Sleep Token one. And it's just nice to have something that you can just kind of put on when it's cold and snowy outside. So that's a really boring answer. It doesn't have a memory or anything. I just kind of recently decided to get some long sleeves.
It's a cool t-shirt though. I like that long sleeve.
Thanks. I also like my original Papa Roach Infest t-shirt, which I've talked about before. It was a baseball t-shirt and it's got black sleeves and a white middle bit, and it's got red glittery cockroaches on it, and I can't wear it anymore because I bought it when I was a child and it's too small for me. But I like the fact that it had this big red glittery cockroach on it, because it was just kind of out of character a bit for metal and new metal. It's like, here's a t-shirt and here's a big red glittery cockroach on it. And I thought that was kind of cool. And now it's been like 20 years since Infest as well, so it's a bit of a relic.
Oh man, no, it hasn't. Stop saying that. Ewan Taylor wants some negativity on the podcast this week. Ewan Taylor wants to know, if you could completely delete one band or artist from history, who would it be? I'm fascinated to see what Elle says, because Elle doesn't really like the negative slant with this kind of stuff.
It's not even just that. It's like, there's lots of bands that I don't really care about. Like, and there's lots of bands that I do really care about. But some of the ones that I'm not too keen on, I don't want to delete, because you can see that other bands came from them. Like, there's some kind of veteran, like proper old school metal bands where I'm not going to say I'm their biggest fan. But if you got rid of them, we might not have some contemporary bands. So I feel like you have to factor that into the decision. So I just went with most recency bias. And I have deleted Iced Earth. I've deleted them because obviously John Schaefer storms the Capitol, two members have left, so they're basically a deleted band anyway. And also, I've never really been a fan, if I'm completely honest. It's just too trad for me. And I listened to a couple of songs recently just to kind of sort of revisit given the current context. And they do just seem to rip off Iron Maiden, and there's no emotion in them, and I just don't care about them. I don't care about them. I don't think they've really added anything or influenced anyone, and now they've fallen apart anyway. So I just thought, oh, let's just get rid of them then.
Yeah, I can't say I'm going to miss never listening to Iced Earth again, to be honest. I know there's a bit of a thing, I'm not saying this with what Elle just said, but there's a bit of a thing where people come online and be like, oh, so glad I never listened to that band. I'm not saying that, because I did used to listen to Iced Earth sometimes, but I probably won't again, and that's fine. My pick for band to delete off the face of the earth is Blood on the Dance Floor.
Get rid of them.
Yeah, fuck that band and everything I've heard around that band. Just not, not interested. Goodbye. We actually covered them on the podcast once about, I mean, it's probably like 10 years ago now or something. And it's just, yeah, would not miss. Ben Wilmer asks, how much are you missing gigs? At various points when I catch up with friends, they're all craving gigs so much, even a downsize like £7 a pint Carlsbergs, or how bad the sound is for support bands at Brixton, are remembered fondly. But then Ben adds, and yet I'm not missing gigs at all. I wish they were a thing. I feel really sorry for those in the industry, but on a day-to-day, I'm surprisingly unbothered by their absence. How do you guys feel about it all? Are you missing gigs, Al?
Yeah, I am. I think I'm missing them in terms of the emotional high of seeing a band you really like and something happening in the moment, because for me, at least, pandemic life is pretty flat. It's not to say it's terrible, but nothing really happens. I just stay in my house, occasionally go for a walk, and then go back into my house again. Whereas with a gig, if it's a band you're really looking forward to, you've got that anticipation of seeing them, and then on stage there's kind of that rush of energy and you don't know what they're going to do, what they're going to play. And then obviously the social aspect as well, because you get to see them sometimes with people that you like who also like that band, and you can all just chat about how cool it is and how exciting it is and how fun it is. And I don't drink Carlsberg, so I'm not missing that.
I just find myself really missing any kind of like lower level basement venue putting on a metal show with a sticky floor with a pint of beer that's gonna make me feel a bit weird the next time drinking it. Like I do miss all of it. And yeah, I mean, we're lucky to go to a lot of gigs when the world is normal, and you know, some, because that's all tied up in work, You know, sometimes if I don't want to say it feels like work, but you know, you're not there in quite the same mentality as you would be if you just bought a ticket and were going for a bit of a laugh. But you know, I think it's in a week or two, it'll have been a year since I've been to a show, which was Beartooth at the Roundhouse. And it's just that I don't think since about 14 years old I've had a year without going to a gig. So it's just, it's really weird, and I'm gagging to get back on that again as soon as possible. And you know, we know it will happen. We just got to be a bit more patient to find out when, I guess.
Tor Arne Venn asks, what has been your favourite experience working for Metal Hammer, and where do you guys picture the magazine in 5 years? Keep up the amazing work. Thanks.
What's been your favourite experience working for Metal Hammer? There's a few that always come to mind. I don't want to just sit here doing like a humble brag about stuff, but I mean, I've been very lucky to do a lot of amazing things for Metal Hammer. In terms of like a one-off experience, I would probably say it's got to be going on board Ed Force One for an Iron Maiden cover feature across Mexico. Even saying those words and hearing them come out of my mouth, that it's a proper, like, if my 14-year-old self could hear me now thing. It's not even, you can't even call it like a childhood dream come true, because Ed Force One didn't exist when I was first into Iron Maiden. So the idea that like you'd be on a plane with Eddie on it, flown by Bruce Dickinson, and he stood in front of you in a pilot's uniform being like, oh, so what do you think of the plane? Like, it's just beyond anything I could have imagined. And, you know, whatever happens with this strange industry we're in, I'll always be incredibly grateful to have experienced something like that. It meant so much to me to do it. So that would definitely be my number one. But also in terms of a general thing, just doing the Golden Gods every year. You know, miss that a lot. We haven't done it for a few years now, of course. You know, we don't really have plans to do it again in the UK. But it was an immense amount of work that went into that. It was almost like an extra job on top of the jobs that we had. But it really felt like when you actually got to that venue on that Monday night after Download, and you got to see everyone in the building, and you got to see all the bands on stage, and it was like a real palpable, not just a celebration of metal, but a real kind of moment where you could take a step back and just kind of appreciate the industry we're in and the work we do. And you know, you don't get a lot of those kind of validating moments at the moment, especially in the pandemic, which is, I know, is something that people in all jobs probably feel the same way about. But I used to love doing the Golden Gods because it was just so much fun and such a crazy night, and it was always by the skin of our teeth, but we always got it done, and it was always a good laugh. And I feel like, you know, if it was the last one we ever do, getting Ozzy up on stage in 2018 and having Parkway Drive do that insane set with all the pyro was a pretty good way to bow out, I reckon.
Yeah, I feel the same. I think some of the awards and the trips that I've done have been my favorite experiences, because the awards really felt like the magazine coming to life. It's like all the readers there, all the industry there, all the musicians there, and just everybody being there because they love metal and want to celebrate it. There's a really cool vibe that comes out of them, and they were just really fun to work on and be around. And then some of the trips I've been lucky enough to do, just getting to see different cultures and bands and fans in different cultures. I feel like I've been so lucky at Hammer. I've been to Taiwan to see Thonic headline a festival. I've been to Kathmandu to see Underside put on their Silence Festival. I've been to Tokyo to see X Japan, a massive band over there who came out in the 80s and sort of reformed and came back. I've been to Navajo Nation to see Alien Weaponry. I've been to Toronto and a couple other places, and it's just amazing to see music and see metal all over the world and just see how unifying and how global it is and how everyone shares that passion for it. I feel so lucky to have had that experience. It's been amazing.
Fuck yeah. We've had a good run. Like, don't worry, we're not going anywhere. Obviously,
you can't get go to a gig right now, but things will start up.
Exactly. And yeah, it's going to be, I mean, all that kind of crazy stuff we've got to do is opportunities like that were becoming increasingly rare anyway in the music industry, because obviously the music industry is a set of flux, and, you know, metal isn't quite as like rolling in the big bucks as it maybe was in years gone by. So yeah, like I said, we never take those things for granted. And I'll just take a trip to Bognor Regis to chat to Aylstorm at the moment, let alone go to Taiwan.
I would really love to speak to someone in person. And that is, you know, for all the amazing trips we've been on that I feel so grateful for, one of the most difficult things in this pandemic that everybody is fine, and it's just that lack of human contact beyond the screen. And one of the brilliant things about interviewing people is having that in-person experience where you meet somebody and you get a sense of what you're like, and you can listen to what they have to say, and then you can write something that hopefully conveys all that to somebody else. And it's fine doing stuff on Zoom and phone calls, and that's the way it is right now, but it's so great to be able to just sit down with somebody and have a chat with them. I'm really looking forward to that coming back.
Yeah, definitely. It's weird because it feels like because we're back in like proper lockdown mode, it feels a bit surreal thinking back to like summer and stuff when, you know, people were going out a bit more and stuff was kind of happening in a slightly like quasi almost normal way, but not quite. And I remember I actually did, I've done one face-to-face interview in the last year, which was when I went to, I did the NXT thing with Wargasm. And I remember just how amazing it felt to do an actual proper face-to-face interview with a band. And it was only like, it was just kind of a fun press junket thingy really, but it just felt so good to actually do something like proper. And again, like you said, I think a lot of that was just the experience of going into London and talking to people and being around people in a work sense. And yeah, like I said, I'll go anywhere with just about any band right now, not Blood of the Dance Floor, but apart from that, anyone else would be fine. What's Joel and oh, I've really struggled to answer this question, to be honest.
It's obvious. It's got an obvious answer.
Oh, okay, because I couldn't think of it, so maybe you could sort me out. Joel Anthony asked, what's been the best COVID/lockdown-related metal song?
Well, actually, I guess he could mean a song that's come out during the COVID lockdown period, but I took it to mean a metal song that is you can link back and relate to COVID and lockdown. And I picked Nine Inch Nails Every Day is Exactly the Same. I've seen a lot of people talking about the song because every day is exactly the same when you're in your house and lockdown. And A.A. Williams has also covered that in her Songs from Isolation series. She's releasing that record in March, but you can see the material on her YouTube channel.
Oh, I took it as meaning COVID-specific, like songs that have been written about this lockdown.
Well, Joel's being ambiguous.
Oh, Joel. no, that's good, though. Oh, God, I don't know. I'll pick Parasite Eve by Bring Me, because it's. I know it's kind of based on a video game or something, but it kind of felt like a bit relevant, so that's fine.
Yeah, it is. It's a whole survival horror thing, so it definitely is relevant. Yeah. I hope that answers your question, Joel, and if it doesn't, please go on the Facebook readers group and shout at us.
Yeah, be one of those moaners on Facebook, Joel. You'd love that, wouldn't you? Bring negativity to the world. Pathetic.
No. Thanks for your question, Joel. Really liked your question.
Thanks for your question, Joel. We appreciate you.
Don't get angry, man.
One, I was joking. I love you, Joel. I don't love you, that's too much. I like you. I consider you a good person. Thank you for being you. David Summers says, how many albums are reviewed each year? I have as close as you can. Sometimes we review more albums in one issue than another, so the number's a little bit in flux, but I have as close to an official number as you can get, courtesy of reviews editor Jonathan Seltzer. Do you know what it is, Elle?
I did some bad maths by counting the reviews in the last issue and then timesing it by 13, which is the number of issues we have in a year, and I got 741.
Oh, okay. Jonathan said 716.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's around 700. Annoyingly, he said, by his maths, if you took the averages and times them across 12, because we actually have 13 issues a year, so it's not technically one each month. If we just did one issue each month and we had 12 issues a year, it would have come to around 666 reviews. Can you believe it? But it doesn't. It's 13 issues a year, so it's 716, apparently. But so probably somewhere between mine and yours, it's fine. And yeah, that's pretty crazy to think that, you know, well over 500,000 reviews.
Think about how many hours of metal that is.
Just it blows my tiny pathetic brain to even think of it. But we love it. We want more. And we've got plenty more to come. As I said, we just finished off a great great new issue that we're going to unveil soon. The latest issue of Metal Hammer is out right now as we speak. tinyurl.com/gethammer to get your hands on that. And we will be back next week right here on the Metal Hammer podcast to talk about like mail and that. Hooray. Gajira back, everybody. It's a good week.
Gajira, yay.
Gajira, yeah. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Ha ha ha.